Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Toll of Invasion Sachs. It's got to be Toll of Invasion. You've got some feelings about this card, and I just want to give you the floor to let your true feelings about this card out.
I'm reluctant to even correct you that is not the name of the card. The card is called Tolls of War.
Tolls of War?
But I think we just got to let it ride.
We got to let it ride. Yeah. I was so confident.
You were really confident. What is Tolls of Invasion?
Tolls of Invasion.
War of the Spark.
It's War of the Spark card. Yeah, it lets you look at their hand.
Yeah. So just shows how dialed in we are. One of the things we might get to is Michael Jacobs, a.k.a. Darkest Mage, was in there. It was a big, like, 500-person RCQ on Magic Online on Friday that he top aided. And so I was like, oh, maybe we'll review that draft. So I went through and wrote down all the picks from the draft from his stream and all of the dual lands. I was like, wow, you could give me 100 guesses at what the names of the dual lands in this set are called, and I would never, ever get them. Tolls of War. We're gonna start right now, because I'm gonna be honest, I don't know how I feel now. Like, I felt very confident that I knew how I felt. And then I drafted this absolutely, like, ho-hum looking black-white deck yesterday with, it had one rare technically, the Aang's Iceberg, whatever.
That's not a rare.
That's not a rare, right? That's a removal spell. So yeah. It was rareless black-white. And I was like, this can't win. And it got 7 wins. So now I don't know what to think about the card.
So, questions for you.
Yes.
Did you beat, like, busted rares and mythics along the way?
Yes, beat the white saga and the blue saga along the way. So, like, was facing good decks. I played very well. I was, like, on stream, focused. I wasn't, like, part of, I think, as we'll talk about my journey this week, part of my journey is, like, I'm playing on my phone and I'm half distracted with Thanksgiving and Jonah and whatever. And so that's also, like, you know, what rings true to me is what you said, if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that it's very easy to lose games in this format.
Yes, it's very easy to lose.
And I have certainly done that. Like, whether it's like something I'm even aware of, the times when I'm even aware of the small things that I'm doing, or I'm like, oh man, if 3 turns ago I had done this instead, I might be able to win. Like, that stuff happens way more in this format than I feel like other formats.
I was playing on my phone at Catherine's family's at Thanksgiving. Like, we were all just sitting and chill, like watching a movie or whatever. And I was playing a game, like half paying attention to the movie and like trying to not be totally engrossed in my game of Magic, you know? And so I was playing a very grindy blue-white deck, and my opponent had flashed in the Unagi of whatever, the 5/5 that you have to waterbend a million to interact with.
Did you have some expletives?
Well, there's another line of text at the bottom of the card.
Yeah.
And true to form, I had no idea that that line of text was on there, which is that if you draw your second card in a turn, your opponent gets to draw two cards. And I cracked a clue on my turn to dig for a land drop, and they drew two cards, and I was like, "Wah!" Everybody looked at me like, "What is happening over there?" But then 3 minutes later, it was still in play, and I did it again, and I screamed so loud. I think everyone thought I was insane.
keep it together, Ben. Lock it up. Okay, so Tolls of War. Let's start here. Since you have prompted me to do so. Tolls of War is the white-black signpost. When it enters, create a clue token, and whenever you sack a permanent during your turn, you make a 1/1 white ally creature token. This ability triggers only once each turn. Here's the journey I've gone on with this card. So last week, I talked about, I don't think this card's very good. I don't think black-white's very good. You said, hey, it's actually doing pretty well in the data. It's color signpost.
You know, my role in the show.
Your role in the show is, yeah, just checking in on the data. I was shocked and awed and did pose to the community like, hey, what am I missing about this card? And the community followed through, and I got a lot of some good messages in our Discord of like, here's a great deck I had that was black white, here's a great some games to look at. So I looked at some games. I know our good buddy Samp, who does Rough Drafts, that podcast, he did his whole episode on black white and Tolls of War this week, and I listened to that. And as I was looking through these game logs that people were sharing to me,
people are playing terrible cards against Tolls. Like, they're playing the next ones.
I gotta tell you that my takeaway from these game logs was not Tolls of War is busted. It was Tolls of War buys you time to find busted cards. Fine. Like, that's a good note. I get behind it. Like, your black deck should have rares in them. Like, Sam shared a log where he was like, this deck was so good. Tolls of War is so good. And I was like, you won every game because of Rise of Sozin.
Right.
Like, Tolls of War is not winning you these games. Judy is not winning you any games. He was not championing Judy, which is the 2/2 that tap, surveil one, then sack, make a copy of this, then sack something.
No, it's the 2/2 that trades off with your opponent's 2-drop.
Correct.
You got it wrong.
So then I went full villain arc. But only to Ben, and I was sharing. I would post in a chat with him, like, here's like a game log, and I'd be like, oh man, Tolls of War on turn two is busted, and it would be a game where my opponent cast Tolls of War on turn two, never cracked the clue, and died promptly, or like, ah, Judy is actually pretty good, and it would be a screenshot of Judy trading with a 3/1.
It was a beautiful arc, and I wish that the rest of the world could have seen it, because I was getting all these messages, and I kept egging you on to post them in recent episodes or in the YouTube comments to stir things up a little bit, and you weren't having any of it, but I'm glad that you're getting it all out on the podcast.
Yeah, I was saving it for the main stage here. So then I had a black-white deck that had bombs in it, and it trophied, and so then I felt like, okay, I think my take stand, I think people are a little too high on these cards, or like misevaluating like what the card is doing, that it's not the card itself, that it's like, whatever, it buys you time. Or yes, there were some times where like people shared screenshots of like, or game logs of where, oh, Tolls is so good. And I'm like, yes, if your plan is to attack on the ground with 3/1s and 2/1s, Tolls is going to look really good.
But that's a bad plan.
I agree. I was like, but that is not a good plan for this format. So like, let's also just be evaluating like what is happening, which is why I sort of wanted to like be like, I think there is a broader picture here of at least my take from the small samples is people not quite like knowing how to evaluate or seeing the forest for the trees of a game to be like, why did you lose that game? Was it because like, or why did you win that game? Was it because of Tolls of War, or was it because your opponent wasn't following the rules of engagement for the format and like anything would have won? Like, a litmus test for me a lot of times looking at these game logs is like, how markedly different is Tolls of War than Forecasting Fortune Teller, which is also speed bump draw card? And like, a lot of times it's pretty similar. So that's not to say like, and Forecasting Fortune Teller is a good card, a great card, you might even say. Tolls of War is not a bad card, but I'm just sort of surprised about the hype around it. But hold on. Then I drafted this deck that had no rares, and it won. And so now I'm unclear about what I think about this card. I'm left sort of feeling a little I'm a little unsure and on shaky footing.
Let me tell you my stance, which I think you'll appreciate because it is, as per usual, and in theory, thing. Because I've played a lot of this format, way more than I have most formats up to this point. Literally never played with or against Tolls of War.
That is astonishing.
So, and I'm in Mythic, like, so people, it can't be that common if I've never never played against it. But
yeah,
I think it's a fine card. My stance is fine card, but that type of card to me prior to playing with or against it looks like a card like, oh, this can win you a game of Magic. Like this is a build around. This can be the central crux of your deck. It's an engine type card. And then after playing the format, I think I was in complete agreement with you last week, and I still feel how I felt because I haven't seen anything to change it, and I'm glad you've gone deep into the trenches for science, is that Tolls does not line up with my view of the format. Certainly Sam's episode about, like, well, it's great if you're black-white and you've got a bunch of black rares. Sure, I'll play Tolls in my deck, but it's not the card that I'm going to pick and build my strategy around, which is where I had it as that going into the format, like, was excited to pick it and make it my strategy. And I don't think that is a viable strategy in this format.
That is my take as well, with the asterisk of this deck.
this
other deck where I'm like, now I'm not really sure, because it did some impressive things. But also, I had to play like circles around my opponents too. Anyway. Okay. So, all right, we got the Tolls of War elephant in the room checked off the list here. Let's do a little housekeeping and dive in on what we want to talk about this week, which is mostly going to be, I think, draft log related, just talking about how we're navigating these formats or navigating drafts in this format. But first things first, let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Show will always be free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon. One is access to our Discord. Lords of Limited Discord is just an awesome community. It feels invaluable to me at this point. Like, I don't know, and obviously I'm biased, like I've been with it from jump, but I feel so like fortunate to have access to big picture, card evaluation, and trophies. Those three channels, I just check. You better believe those notifications are red. I have checked those channels because I'm really curious in these early weeks what people in our community are saying about cards, what their experiences are, what their questions are. I just find it to be an invaluable resource for me as I'm navigating the early stages of a format. So if you are looking for a community of people like that, let's say maybe you're a draft degen, but you don't have other folks in your life to be a degen with, the Lords of Limited Discord is a place for you. And we also have access at higher tiers to our podcast feed, where you get access to this episode a day early ad-free, and also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Neil, Fogo Narabo, Mayhem-esque, and Ryan. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Do you think that's Mayhem Esquire?
I would assume so, but
Mayhem, comma Esquire. Anyway, thank you to all of those people. And my plug for the Discord is also, it's a great way to stay engaged with Magic when you don't have time to play as much as you want. Like, that's how I use it primarily. If, you know, stuff's busy, I check in on, like, big picture is the one I go to the most. Or at times, like I was talking about, I played a few games on my phone when I was visiting Catherine's family this weekend. There's times where I don't feel like, well, I can't really start a game of Magic and be like offline for the next 10 minutes mentally, but I can pop open the Discord and check out a channel and see what the scuttle is. And it feels like it keeps me in touch with Magic when otherwise that would be difficult to do sometimes, which I really appreciate about it.
The other channel to shout out, which is fun, like to that point of the I don't have time to draft myself, that's a great what's the pick channel to pop into to get a little quick fix of, like, I'd like a little quick draft puzzle of what would I take, little thought exercise. So there's tons of those backlogged for you as well. I've got some brief draft updates and some more stories of my journey this week, not only with regards to Tolls of War, but beyond. I had a bit of a you start to this week in terms of how you started last week, because I did a lot of losing this week. I fell to like Mythic 91%, I think was the lowest I fell to, off the back of certainly some O3s, but a lot of like sub 3-3 runs.
And was this for science drafts, or were you full tryhard mode?
I was mostly full tryhard mode. I mean, it was all on my phone, a lot of these drafts, but full tryhard. I mean, with the caveat of like, I feel like maybe one of those was like, this draft isn't going well and I'm seeing a shrine. Like,
yeah, those are dangerous. No.
Those are dangerous. Yeah, it's two bad tastes that end up tasting quite bad together. But mostly I would say I was trying hard, but this was sort of it was a confluence of a number of things. And I think this losing streak was partially this format is just hard and that underlying point of it's very easy to lose games. I also think I also want to take accountability of like, there is just like variance exists. This is one of the things I was like thinking about this week was just like, someone's got to lose. Someone's got to 0-3. Like, even if you have a pod of 8 Hall of Famers, someone is going to 0-3. And someone is going to, like, not every... I feel like one of the things we do, or one of the things that, people who engage with limited content is, like, there must be a secret, or there must be a, if I had done X, Y, Z, I could have trophied. And this game doesn't really have that. Like, this game has, sometimes you're just going to lose. And that's what we're signing up for in the world of this game. And I'm not trying to be like, and that's why I lost is only for things out of my control. No, but I did sort of be like, there were definitely some decks. Like, I have a draft log later on of a deck that's like an awesome Grixis control deck that I think looks very good and plays by the rules of engagement. And it went 1-3. And like, some of that, I'm sure in there was a game I screwed up, but I'm also sure like sometimes you're just on the draw. Sometimes you stumble, you mulligan, whatever. Like, we're signing up for some variance. But I also drafted some messy decks. Primarily the messiness for me doesn't come from shrines, but it comes primarily off the back of starting with a 3-color rare, like an Aang or a Fire Lord Azula, and then not honing in on a 2-color pair and not getting enough fixing. I think one of the things I think that I can do in this format is I'll get fixing because there's dual lands, there's Barrels of Blasting Jelly, there's Aang's Journey. I think I can get fixing in this format. And you can't always. And even if you can, some of those cards are super undesirable to play.
Correct. The Grixis Azula is the 4-drop one, right? The 4-4 mm-hmm. with... Yeah, that card's not that good, right?
Oh. I think that card is busted.
But you have to... The problem is you have to untap and attack with it. Like, it doesn't do anything when it enters the battlefield. Like, yes, is it absurd when you do the thing? Absolutely. It's got a very wide range. Like, that would be one where I would... I don't think I would ever start with that. Pack one, pick one. I would want to be on that road and then already have the ability to splash it before I was playing that card.
Well, I mean... I don't know if we can dial in on that card. I don't agree with you on that. I think that card is extremely powerful and I'm happy to first pick it. But I think happy to first pick it with the caveat of then figure out what your 2-color pair is and make sure you get good fixing. Like, make sure you're prioritizing the dual lands highly and not being like, oh, I could play a Barrels of Blasting Jelly in my 0 water bending deck or whatever.
Right.
So I think I've learned a bit from those mistakes and feel like I've come back from the brink. I should say, like, I've trophied quite a bit. I'm out of the mythic dumpster percents, like, and whatever, by the time we're done recording today, I think probably we'll all be reset to plat 4 anyway. So we'll all be starting from scratch. But yeah, I feel like I did my due diligence of like, okay, let's buckle down and figure out what's going on. And I definitely did. And I think I'm finally in a good place where I understand the sort of like, I do feel like it's a bit of a teeter totter of power and synergy. Like, I was certainly leaning, I think, a bit harder into like just taking good cards. And then I would end up with like a pile of good cards and a pile of filler and maybe not a good mana base to glue those together. But then sometimes I would like try and go after synergy, and then the synergy doesn't quite get there, and I'm giving up on power that I'm seeing in favor of trying to make synergy work. And I think that's a like an interesting balancing act this format asks of you. And I feel like I have a good, better sense of what to do. And just a couple of takeaways for myself is one, I'm trying to not be reluctant to move into a deck if I think it's open. Like, even if it's not a deck I want to draft, I had a draft that was unfortunately on my phone, but I remember it very vividly because it landed to a deck that played very well. but it was red black, which is a deck that I'm not really trying to pilot. But it was a real like bob and weave draft where I picked the blue white Sokka, pack one, pick one, the Azorius 2/4 uncommon, into Iroh's Demonstration, the 2-mana uncommon deal 4 or deal 1 to everything, into Great Divide Guide, which is the rare green 2-drop that turns everything or all your lands and allies into Birds of Paradise. And then I got Epic Downfall, pick 5, the removal spell that exiles a MV3 or greater, into pick 7, Cruel Administrator, which is the 5-mana Rakdos uncommon that has Raid, make a 2-2, or no, Raid gets a counter, and when it attacks, you make a 2-2 with Firebending 1. Anyway, and do I think Cruel Administrator is a great card? No. Do I think Epic Downfall is, like, insane? No, but Epic Downfall pick 5 is something.
That's
Cruel
good,
Administrator
yeah.
pick 7 is something. And I scrapped a number of my early picks in favor of that, and then was met with, hey, you're not, maybe I, like, yes, I did get some rares in that deck too, but what was more apparent in that draft, and the reason I got the rares is not because I opened them, but they were passed to me because I read the signals, and the wheel was just chock full, every single pack of red and black cards. And that's where I want to be. I really want to try and find myself in that space in every draft if I can.
Well, the nice thing about being in that space is what it lets you do. I do think this format rewards a deep understanding of the archetypes and how to build them. Mm-hmm. Is it lets you have selection of the pieces you want to include
yes.
in your deck. Whereas if your deck's contested, you're just kind of like stuck taking the blue or red card that you see if blue-red is contested. And oftentimes you can't quite assemble the style of deck that you want to compete with. Whereas when your lane's open, you have a lot more agency over how your deck is planning to win games, I've found.
Which is kind of a double-edged sword with some of these more trinkety archetypes, maybe like red-black, certainly like black-white. Like the first black-white deck I had, I took it to the Discord first because I was like, my sideboard was all black and white cards. So I could have played a lot of combinations of things. And I was like, I'm not sure, like, what, Matt, am I supposed to stretch the mana and get Cat Gator in here? Am I supposed to play the reanimate spell? Like, how many of the trinkety, whatever, what's the callous, the one drop with menace that dies into a clue? Like, am I supposed to lean into that? Like, what do I do? So I think you're totally right. You get agency over, you get to just like pick when the wheel is chock full of cards in your colors, you get to pick like, ooh, I need this piece. I want this piece. But it also then requires that deep understanding to know which pieces go well or best with which versions of those decks.
I will say, as a counterpoint to your story or to tell my journey this week, it's yeah. been smooth sailing. I have been crushing Sazar since last week's episode.
What a guy. What a guy. I'm glad.
Like I understand how I want to engage with the format. I've been engaging with it that way. I've been winning quite a bit. I will say I have played against significantly less disgustingly powerful cards this past week than I did mm-hmm. in week one. But I also do have good plans for how to win those games of Magic when I do face those types of cards. Whereas in week one, I was just folding like a cheap house of cards because I wasn't engaging with the format in quite the right way. So, it's been nice to feel, who knows if it'll continue, but it's been nice to feel validated about, you know, how I've kind of synthesized the format in my head.
Is there like a certain archetype you find yourself leaning towards again and again? Are you still in the Jeskai space quite a bit?
I'm still living in the Jeskai space. Yeah, I think blue white is where I want to be, which is not shocking. That is one of my favorite styles of decks. The other thing I want to touch in on with you before we get into card updates is mm-hmm. I've got a re-ranking of the bendings in my head. Are the bendings still Ooh. In the same place in your head?
That's a good question. I don't know. Let me hear your updates and let me see how that vibes with what I feel.
I'm back to, I think, almost my original rankings, which is...
No, okay, never mind. I'm out.
Airbending 1, Waterbending 2, Earthbending 3, Firebending 4. I don't think Firebending is that good.
I don't... I think, closer to you this week on Fire Nation Cadets than I was last week. I think I was... drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit last week on Fire Nation Cadets, and I've cooled significantly on that as a plan. But I still think Firebending is pretty busted.
Well, so I agree. I do think firebending is a good mechanic. Like, I think we underrated firebending. And like I said, that was the thing I wanted to explore most week one. I did. Here's the conclusion I've come to about firebending, which is it's very one-dimensional. Like, it's very good at doing the one thing, but you have to be attacking. And you know, like, when your opponent plays a mountain and they play Fire Nation Cadets, or they play mountain and they play their red 2-drop, you know exactly what their plan is. And blue and white get such good tools to stop that plan. Like, if you play the white pacifism and if you play watery grasp, it's so hard for the red decks to fight through that. And they need their cards to attack to do the thing. And their cards are not good two-way players. And so I think it's back in last place for me. I think it was very exploitable for a period of time. And I think people have warmed up to it now and they know what's up. And if you want to beat it, I think it is pretty easy to tear apart a deck that has to attack to win. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are a time of traditions. Some people have many in their family, and some have none or are just beginning their own. Now's the time to reflect on what they mean to you or to rewrite traditions and make your own.
One tradition that I really look forward to is we have this felt advent calendar. My grandma sewed this advent calendar of, like, it's like a felt Christmas tree and then 24 little Velcro ornaments that you put up on the tree each day leading up to Christmas. I had a lot of rules as a kid around, like, which ornaments belonged on which day. A lot of it was focused on, like, delayed gratification of, like, the most Christmassy ones you save for closer to Christmas. Does that track with you? Like, you want Santa, you want the presents, you want the stockings. As close to Christmas as possible. You don't want to front load those. Put all the derpy ones on the first and the second, etc. And then she made, so we had that one in our house, and then she made a duplicate of them for me and my brothers, for each of our families. And Jonah really looked forward to putting those ornaments up on the little calendar each December too.
Figuring out how therapy can be incorporated into your traditions can ensure you take the time for yourself during what can be a very joyful, but sometimes hectic and lonely time of year. So close the year with clarity, not chaos, and give BetterHelp a try. It's one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally.
This December, start a new tradition by taking care of you. Our listeners get 10% off at betterhelp.com/lords.
That's betterhelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
Well, and I was pretty low. I was low on waterbending last week because I'm going to use this as a way to segue into this list of cards. Is I was low on waterbending last week. Not because I don't like the mechanic, but because I was like, there's not really that many good waterbending payoffs. But one that is, that has just consistently dominated games for me, been MVPs, you know, more than Tolls of War in my black-white decks. The card I return to again and again, and I want to just give you major props because I sort of stuck my nose up at this in the crash course at you, is Water Tribe Rallier. This is the one in white.
Excellent.
One on a white 2/2 with waterbend 5. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. Reveal a creature with power 3 or less from among them and put it into your hand. This card just, like, demands an answer. And if you don't answer it, it just runs away with the game. And one of the really cool things about it is it lets your mono white aggro decks, your blue white tempo decks, play into the long game with, like, ease. It's a really, really excellent card. So it's sort of like airbending is great, but there's not a lot of cards that actually say airbending. Waterbending on something like Water Tribe Rallier or the blue 2/3 uncommon that lets you draw cards. Like
Katara.
Yeah, Katara. On the cards where it's impactful, it's just incredibly impactful.
Yes. And I will say, along with that, I've played some more Kyoshi Battle Fans this week, which is the 2-drop artifact that makes it 1/1.
Not you too.
Equipped creature gets +1/+1. It's an equipped cost of 2. No, this is not similar to No. This is similar to the Tolls of War discussion, where I still feel how I felt about this card, which is that, similar to Tolls, going into the format, I thought this was going to be able to be a thing, like a key piece in a game plan. And it is not that, which is why I think you and I were both down on it last week. But it does have a home. Like, it's very nice in blue-white, exactly. Like, when you're waterbending, having 2 things to waterbend, you need 2 drops. Are you picking it highly? Never. Never picking it highly. But if you need a 2-drop, it slots in pretty nicely in blue-white. If you're taking use of both pieces of the cardboard, also plays very nicely with Haybai because you can sack the equipment, put the counters on Hay-Bye, you have another body to dump those counters onto. I think it does enough in blue-white that I am happy to play it there. Not happy, but like it's got a nice home in that deck.
The other end of the waterbending spectrum, I want to check in on Benevolent River Spirit. This is blue-blue for a 4/5 flying ward 2 uncommon as an additional cost to cast it, waterbend 5. When this creature enters, scry 2. I was really high on this card. I don't remember where it was ranked in my top blue uncommons, but it was certainly among the top 3 blue uncommons. I'm kind of down on this card because for two reasons. One, not every blue deck makes it like cheaper. Not every blue deck is dumping permanents on the battlefield. And two, I don't know if you've ever gotten this airbended, but it is disastrous because it costs 7.
I haven't gotten it airbended, but I have been the airbendee and it has felt great.
It's real good. I had it airbended twice in one game and I was like, I think my relationship with Benevolent River Spirit has come to a close here. yeah, I don't think that card is that good. We did this last week on Lords Unlimited, but I feel like we must. It's still reigning supreme here. Lost Days is the number one game in hand win rate common in the set by not like by a nose, by 0.5%. This is the 4 and a blue tuck something or bottom it, two from the top or all the way on the bottom, creature or enchantment and make a clue. I don't understand how this is the number one game and hand win rate common. Do you?
Sorry, nerds. It's firebending lesson. I don't know what to tell you.
Firebending lesson by a lot, I would think.
Yeah, like by a lot. But I will say this has to be bolstered by people topping the card when they shouldn't. Like there have been like at least half the times I've cast this card, my opponents have put the card on top of their library and I've been like, excuse me? Like you just sealed the game in my favor completely.
They're like, I do want to draw Rumble Arena in 2 turns like, yeah, and have it not be a creature.
No, like what is going on? So like that's gotta be bolstering it some because it's happened. Like I'm playing at whatever, Diamond Mythic, and people are making that mistake. So yeah, you have to assume at the lower ranks, people are making that mistake also. And when that happens, then it really is incredible.
I still feel how we felt last week, which is that like, definitely want one in all my blue decks, but I'm not picking it that highly.
I agree. Yeah, it's just 5 mana is a lot.
Okay, I do have a little bit of respect. We talked about this last week, but I do have a respect for mid-range ramp in this format now off the backs of the 2/2 drops that let you ramp, Raucous Audience. I mean, there's more than this, but the ones that at common or uncommon, I guess also the green-blue signpost. But the ones I have listed here, Raucous Audience is the one in a green 2/1, taps for a green or taps for double green if you have something with power 4 or greater. Or Shared Roots is the uncommon lesson that's rampant growth, searches up a basic, puts it onto the battlefield. Like, I've played decks that look clunky, and they're not like necessarily trophying, but they're getting 5 wins, and they're just like a pile of uncommons and 3 or 4 of these 2-mana rampers, and then you drop a 4-drop on turn 3 and a 5-drop on turn 4, and that wins games of Magic in this format. So, and Raucous Audience is a card that I've started clocking because it wheels a lot, and so if I'm in a lower powered draft and feel like that's where I'm leaning and I'm getting, you know, these big 4-mana 4/4s and impactful 5-drops, if I can scoop up some Raucous Audiences on the wheel, I think that's a game plan in this set.
I agree. Have you played any of those Foggy Swamp Vinebenders? The 3G 4/3?
I played it once. J-Maz was in my chat and he was like, I have never put that in a deck and I hope not to. And I was like, for shame. It wasn't like incredible for me yet, but like it's in that realm. That's the common 4/3 that can't be chump blocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another card that I need a mea culpa on, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but I certainly had some harsh feelings about it, but I think it's just good. This is Seismic Sense.
The single Why green. Did you have harsh feelings about this card? It's free, and it's a lesson.
Well, okay. So Seismic Sense, single green, lesson. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of lands you control. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. You just can't. You can't fire this off on turn one responsibly, right? So, like, the land part of this card, I think, is a little, I don't know, feels a little out of place to me. And because I don't want to cast this early in the game. But what I didn't get, yes, you're right that it's a lesson, so he gets a bump. But like, there's a lot of really good creatures in this format. And as soon as you have one of those in your deck, being able to go like, oh, I'm on six lands, let's roll the dice and dig deeper towards my Bant Aang or whatever. Like, this card is good. Okay, this is a little bit of a week five question for you. But I did face a deck with three Tiger Dillos. This is the one in a red 4/3, can't attack or block unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. And I've seen them last pick in quite a number of packs. And so I'm in the similar sense of the raucous audience ramp to, you know, things early. Two mana 4/3s are large. And I do think that this might be a sort of like, you know, off-ramp strategy. If you like, it's a card that I'm going to start clocking in my packs that I see them in.
I agree. I've already been there. Yeah, I've liked that card. I haven't played with it yet, but it's on the, much like the mono colored cards, it being there and being a sideways-ish kind of build around, it's good enough. The power is there if you can turn it on. It's just going to be like a once in 100 drafts type thing.
That's what I would assume, right? Like, because it has to be a draft where you don't have something better to do and you're clocking the Tiger Dillos and you're getting them late.
And it's right for you to be red-green after all of that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Another card I just want to shout out is Hama the Bloodbender. This is the 2/3 Dimir uncommon. 3/3. When it enters, target opponent mills 3. You exile up to 1 non-creature, non-land card from that player's graveyard. For as long as you control Hama, you may cast the exiled card during your turn by waterbending X rather than paying its mana cost, where X is its mana value. This card is cracked. You said that when we first read it. I was a little like, oh, it seems fine. It seems good. But you were like, no, this is busted. And I feel that way too. Though you definitely get in spots where you're like, I would like to cast this, but you don't currently have something in your graveyard. So I guess I'm going to roll the dice. But have you gotten to do the wombo combo by milling an airbending lesson?
Well, you can also do it with boomerang basics, where you keep bouncing your own Hama and mill them out.
Well, but it's better with airbending lesson because then your Hama only costs 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So if you mill, because it doesn't exile the spell after you cast it, so if you mill Airbending Lesson, you use Airbending Lesson on your Hama, recast it, mill 3 again. Like, I have decked people by just going, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And it's nice and safe. If they only have sorcery speed interaction, you can do it where you're like, okay, and then I will end my turn with Hama exiled.
Right.
And then I'll start my turn by casting it from exile, etc. Card's very good. Last card I have on this list that I want to talk about is Fire Nation Worship, which is a 3-mana artifact uncommon. It's a 4/4 vehicle with reach and crew 2. And when it dies, you make a clue token. Just continually impressed by this card is all I want to say. Like, I never like seeing it on the other side of the battlefield. I like having it in my deck. I feel like it's got some, I feel like the things that I wanted from Kyoshi Battle Fan. I feel like it does. It's like, oh, it's a 4-power thing. It dies into a clue. It's a this. And also, this is the number 47. Fire Nation Worship has reach.
Fire Nation Worship does have reach.
It's got it written all over it. Those are the cards I wanted to chat about. I don't know if you have anything you needed updates on.
I don't have anything super specific other than the cards that I have played more and more and more this week as I've been on this heater is Path to Redemption, which is the 1 in a white pacifism. And you pay 5 to exile, sack the aura, and exile the creature to make a 1/1. And also Water Grasp, the single blue aura, enchanted creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. You can waterbend 5 to have enchanted creature's owner shuffle it into their library. Both those cards are incredible, I think, for this reason. Like, they just line up perfectly with what the format is asking of you, which is the format wants you to interact, and they are very cheap, efficient interaction spells. They do have the ability, if necessary, late in the game to get something completely off the battlefield. Like, Watery Grasp can be 6 mana or like 1 waterbend 5 to get something off the battlefield. The Pacifism can get something off the battlefield exiled permanently in a pinch, which is nice, like a nice buyout clause for the primary mode being cheap, efficient interaction. And then you don't mind getting 2-for-1. Like, that's the beautiful thing about them is, you know, we were talking about last week, you can get 2-for-1 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, and still win a game of Magic in this format.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that big of a blowout if your opponent airbends the thing that you put the pacifism on, because you bought yourself two turns and you can start to craft a board and you can start to craft a game plan and you can compete with them on card advantage. Getting two for one is a pretty minuscule thing in this format, ultimately because of the ceiling on a lot of the rares. And just making sure that you get to play Magic is very important. And I think both of those cards, and specifically that's why Blue-White I think is so excellent, is you get access to both of them and you get them fairly late. Like, you don't have to spend high picks on them. And as a result, decks of blue and white cards that are commons and uncommons really get to compete and play good games of Magic. And I just very much appreciate that about the color pair.
I want to co-sign you shouting out both of those cards. I am higher on both of them this week. A couple things. One, Path to Redemption triggers your Tolls of War. I've had that come up where you sack it on your turn to get your 1-1, and then Tolls will give you an additional 1-1. The other thing I will say is I had my first like actual whatever blowout with it, where I had the aura on my opponent's thing. They cast, I think it was Airbending Ascension, the white uncommon, and they airbended their... It's my first experience getting a creature airbended out from under a pacifism effect, and that felt really bad. I still won that game. So to your point of, you can get two for one a few times and still win, and that'll be okay. So that happened. And the thing I didn't realize about Watery Grasp is that I was running into this situation where I was like, ugh, it's not tapped. I want to just get rid of this thing. And it's like, well, for 6 mana, 5 of it being waterbended, the turn you cast it, you can get rid of the creature, which it makes it a nice late game draw as well.
Yeah, the card is good. They're both just very good cards, and they go later than they should, in my opinion. I'm scrolling through just to make sure I didn't miss anything. Another card that I've played with and against a lot this past week is Gather the White Lotus, and that card is incredible. 4 and a white sorcery, create a 1/1 white ally creature token for each planes you control, scry 2. You should be trying to be heavy white in this format. I think white is pretty close to the best color, like with blue. Those are definitely the two best colors, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's asking you to be heavy white, and that's already something you should be interested in doing because all the white cards play well together. And it just juices up all your ally stuff, makes it trivially easy to go wide around the opponent. It's been scary to play against, and it's been great every time I've cast it.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
And the only other thing to really throw out in the world is, like, as far as cards, you just have to know what matters. Like, I do think the format is that. And I think it's tricky because there are a lot of types of cards that wouldn't normally matter that do matter. But once you start to figure out, okay, these are the cards that matter. This isn't actually a Magic card. It looks like one, but you're basically mulliganing when you cast it. Like, that's the quickest way to lose games of Magic. You know, we said it's easy to lose games of Magic. Like, it's easy to say, well, you're going to lose games of Magic to your opponent's bomb rares. It's also very easy to lose games of Magic to playing a card in your deck that you're not really supposed to have in your deck and drawing it, and then you're down a card. Like, that being, it's weird in that I feel like I can get two for one multiple times and come back from that.
But you don't want to be two for one-ing yourself.
You know, yeah. Like, it's really bad when you play cards that aren't worth a card in your deck, because then, like, you get two for one and then you draw that card, and then all of a sudden you've been two for one twice, and it does get harder and harder each time to come back from.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to some draft logs here. We're gonna kick things off with one of mine. Our idea was to try and have one a little higher power, a little lower powered, because I feel like those are the kinds of scenarios you find yourself in this format. So we'll kick things off with a higher powered start to a draft in Pack one, pick one, Appa Steadfast Guardian. This is 2WW for the 3/4 Flash Flying Mythic. When it enters, airbend any number of other target non-land permanents you control. And whenever you cast a spell from exile, create a 1/1 white ally creature token. This is my first time getting to pack one, pick one this card.
It's very good, but this isn't even in the top 15 rares in the set, right?
No, except, like, I mean, like...
Which is absurd. Like, the rares in this format are dumb.
It kind of just depends on, like, how much of this bison, how many pieces of the bison do you get, you know, with, like, are you ambushing something with it? Stonks go up. Are you saving one of your things for a removal spell? Stonks go up. Like, if it's just a 4-mana 3/4 flyer, like, yeah, that's good, but it's answerable.
Well, sure, but even if you hit those situations, it's still not in the top 15, like, which is just bonkers to think about. Yeah. Whatever. It's a very good Magic card.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so pack one, pick two. See the following cards as options. Significantly fewer cards that I'm happy with. No commons really in consideration. There's a Watery Grasp, the blue enchantment or a removal spell. In the uncommons, there's a Seismic Sense, that green lesson that looks at the top X cards, where X is the number of lands, and you may reveal a creature or land from among them, put it into your hand. There's Master Piandao, the 4 and a white 4/4 first strike legendary ally. Whenever it attacks, you look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal an ally, equipment, or lesson card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And your rare is Secret Tunnel. This is the land that can't be blocked. Taps to add a colorless and 4-tap two target creatures you control to chair a creature type can't be blocked this turn. Two things about this card. One, I finally got to have this in a deck with Cave of Two Lovers and getting to search, because you can search this up.
Wow, it's a cave.
So you search this up as a cave and then Earthbend 3 onto it as a 3/3 unblockable. Ooh. So very nice. And also, I played against this yesterday and thought that I could like fizzle the activation by killing one of the two things out from under it.
No, it's got multiple targets, right?
Yeah, but on resolution, there aren't, and they don't share a creature type. So I thought, oh, if I kill one, it'll be fine. They won't be unblockable, but that was not how that worked. So if you're dumb like me and think that that's true, it is not true. What do you like out of this significantly weaker pack?
Can I sell you on Secret Tunnel over Master P and Dow?
That's kind of, upon looking at this, I was like, huh, I think I should have taken Secret Tunnel, because I think I was thinking of it more as blocked. Yeah, an earthbending thing, but it's quite good in the ally decks.
Very good in the allies decks. And Master P and Dow is also very good, but it's a 5-drop that has to attack. Like, Master P and Dow is not that much better than the 3/4 vigilance that comes down and puts 2+1/+1 counters on things.
That can't be true. But I hear what you're saying. But yes, I think you're right on Secret Tunnel. You can sell me on Secret Tunnel here.
Yeah, that's what I want to take here. Secret Tunnel has been absurd. And I think more than anything else, you want ways to steal games. I think that is a defining feature of this format, is that there are many different ways to steal games, and all of them are good, and you should be trying to do it.
Well, and this one is impossible to interact with.
Well, there are so many that are impossible to interact with.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. Well, and if you take the colorless land, that definitely impacts what you take pick three. But I have the two white cards in my pile. And so then pack one, pick three, another weak pack here. And I think it boils down to two cards. One is Airbending Lesson, 2 and a white instant. Airbend target non-land permanent, draw a card. Where are you at on this? Still best white common?
I don't think I'm still taking Airbending Lesson as the top white common. I'm taking Pacifism over it now.
I don't know if I'm there yet, but Airbending Lesson has fallen a little bit for me since last week.
There are just a lot of cards with ETBs, and you can never airbend something with an ETB without it feeling atrociously bad. You oftentimes don't care about Airbending Lesson being a lesson in white. And I think 2 mana versus 3 mana is pretty big. Like, Airbending Lesson is more flexible, but I just have found time and time again that the Pacifism card, which I really need to learn the name of. Path of Redemption is significantly better. Like, not significantly better, they're close. But if I had the choice of playing 2 Path of Redemptions and 1 Airbending Lesson, or 1 Path and 2 Airbending Lessons, I'm always on 2 Paths.
Okay, yeah. All right, so the pick is Airbending Lesson versus the namesake card of the episode, Tolls of War, the white-black enchantment. And as I said, white black enchantment gets a lot less enticing if you have the colorless land in your pile.
But I still think even with 2 white cards, it's less enticing. You have the chance to be mono white with your mythic rare and get deeper into one of the best colors and stay flexible to potentially being either mono white or opening a bomb in pack 2 and getting a direction there. Like, I'm here for tolls in black white if you've got some black rares, but I do not want to voluntarily go down that path this early.
I didn't know. At the time, I didn't know. I thought everyone was talking about it like it was the best thing to do in the format. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll give it a shot. So I took the Tolls of War here, but you're going to diverge pretty significantly. Though, I'm curious to see. Our listeners can hold the two paths in their head, I think. Pack one, pick four, really weak pack. There's a blue-black dual land, Serpent's Pass. There's, gosh, what is in this pack? There are no white cards other than Southern Air Temple, the White Shrine. There's an Otter Penguin, your boy. Should we check in on this? You still feeling the love for Otter Penguin after last week?
I still love Otter Penguin. And to everyone who's a Penguin doubter, I just have to say you don't get it, and that's okay.
Okay.
I mean, Forecasting Fortune Teller is a very good card. Also, they do different things. And yeah. there are decks where I would cut all my Otter Penguins for Forecasting Fortune Tellers, but there are also decks where I would cut all of my Forecasting Fortune Tellers for Otter Penguins. Decks want to do different things in the format. I think Forecasting Fortune Tellers is incredible in blue-black and some versions of blue-white. I think blue-red really wants Otter Penguins more often than not. And I think some flavors of blue-white really want Otter Penguins. And it's a way to win a game of Magic when you don't have rares in your deck and pressure your opponent when you don't have rares in your deck. And that is something that is extremely valuable.
Great. So let him know if it's Ben's phone number if you want to text him about Otter Penguin. Seriously, if you're mono white, what do you take out of this pack?
You either take Guru Pathik or Otter Penguin, I think. I would lean towards Otter Penguin.
Otter Penguin. Guru Pathik is the 2 Simic hybrid 2/4. When it enters, look at the top 5. You may reveal a Lesson Saga or Shrine, put it into your hand. And whenever you cast a Lesson Saga or Shrine, you put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature you control. Having taken Tolls of War, I took Serpent's Pass, the blue-black dual land, just as like, I feel like I get in. This was a sort of preemptive, like, I often get myself into messy 3-color decks. Let me hedge that off by taking a dual land out of a weak pack. And also, the sacrifice lands do trigger your sacrifice stuff.
Correct. And just speaking of Magic cards that are not a card, I'm looking at many hats here, which is 1 and a black, 2/2, and you pay 2 and a black, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. It's just not a Magic the Gathering card in this format.
I did play it in this black-white deck, though.
In this double tolls deck?
This is what I don't... I don't know. This was just a single tolls deck. But yeah, I like... This is why I'm wrestling with what to do. Because I agree with you. I agree with you that it's not a card. And yet... here's what I think. I think it's not a card. I think it is a synergy piece. Like, if your deck is operating... If your deck is full synergy... Cards like that do go up. Like, I have a new... I thought Corrupt Court Official was not a card.
And it isn't.
It is. Having played Black-White this week, Corrupt Court Official does have a home. But part of that home is, like, sometimes... Like, when your opponent plays Forecasting Fortune Teller, you're not pleased when you have Corrupt
Court Official. Yeah.
But... If Corrupt Court Official is just you're like, I'm playing it because Virus Beetle. No, that's not a card. If it's a synergy piece in your sacrifice deck, it does get there. Because when your opponent doesn't play Forecasting Fortune Teller, it really does put a pinch on what they're doing.
Sure. Yes.
But I'm just trying to, like, I don't know why I'm trying to devil's advocate here, because I don't really like Merchant of Many Hats, but I do think there's an asterisk after it's not a real card.
Yeah, I agree. There's an asterisk.
Okay.
But I agree mostly there's an asterisk.
Mostly cosine. Yeah, no, I'm still with you that 2-mana 2/2s are bad.
It's bad. They're really. But somebody had asked in recent episode discussion, does that mean you like the 1 and a white 1/2 that puts a +1/+1 counter on something? Because that can be a 2/3 if you like 2/3s. Also, no, that card's not really a Magic the Gathering card in this format.
That feels like it leans more synergistic to me. Like, do you want the ally or whatever? Like, that's where it gets the, like, it's a no with an asterisk. Like,
no with an asterisk. There's so many cards. It's such a weird thing that the format asks of you, which is that, like, you got to get on board early.
Uh-huh.
But you got to get on board early without playing bad cards, which is tougher to do. Like, you need rares and uncommons and interactive spells, and like it's wild how much better the 1 and a white 2/2, like whenever it's tapped you gain a life, scry one, is than your average common 2-drop in the format. That card's way better than the average common 2-drop.
I don't know what it is about that card, but I feel like I have to kill it on sight. I feel like I'm like, I cannot let you. I refuse to let you get one activation out of this. I don't know why. But yeah, it doesn't feel good. So as evidenced by the pick three Tolls of War, I did muscle my way into black-white here. And with a deck, it was black-white was very open. Like, almost every card in my pool is black or white. I was curious on how to build this and ended up with a deck I was very happy with.
But if you, just for anyone who is following along at home, if you don't take Tolls of War there, you don't have to end up black-white. Which is nice. Like there's a world where you go mono white, you spec on a Cave of Two Lovers, pick five to go along with your secret tunnel from pick two, and then like you flirt with green for a little bit, and ultimately you probably end up going into pack two open enough that you can do anything, and then you open a pack two pick one, the Mechanist Aerial Artisan, which probably is enough to push you into blue, or you have the option to take Gather the White Lotus and try to go mono white. I just think if you don't take Tolls, you end up with a lot more flexibility in the draft.
Though, here's the zone. To go back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode, when I look at the wheel of pack one, I get to take mostly the best cards out of every pack, and they're all cards that make my deck. So yes, you will... You get to open a blue rare that ostensibly pushes you into blue, but is the wheel alive for you? Because here, pack one, pick nine, I get Callous Inspector, the 1-mana 1/1 menace that dies into a clue. I get a black-white dual land, pick 10. I get Canyon Crawler, the Swamp Cycler, pick 11. I get Merchant of Many Hats, pick 12, and I get Corrupt Court Official, pick 13. And all of those cards make my black-white deck.
Yes, I will say, looking a little more closely at the wheel, I don't think I would take the Mechanist, because blue is clearly not open in pack one. And right. I have gotten myself in trouble.
So
thinking like, well, this wasn't open in pack one, I'll do the thing in pack two. Like, that strategy doesn't work so well in this format.
That's one that I should have clocked on my journey of 0-3s and 1-3s of like, stop trying to make blue happen or whatever in pack two. Like, it's just not gonna happen. Yeah,
well, it's not even blue specific.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that's a generally accepted draft strategy that for whatever reason has not worked well for me in this format?
Yeah.
So I think I would pack two, pick one, gather the white lotus and try to be heavy white, and then see what comes. But you're right, black is flowing on the wheel, but as it should.
It's not a great color, and if you don't have the rares to back it up, or the synergies, I guess. So that's how that draft ended up for me, and I got the trophy, 7-1 with this black-white deck.
Nice, nice. All right, moving on to one of my drafts here from actually last night.
Oh.
So I have a very interesting pack one, pick one for you here, which is...
This is 17 lands free. This is off the dome.
This is off the dome from last night, fresh off last night. And I will admit, after I made this pick, I was very curious, and I went to the DATA to see what the game and hand win rates were. So
I'm surprised you didn't have them committed to memory already, considering how often you check the website.
Twice more this format than I do in most formats.
Yeah.
So we had a double rare of the same rare, which was the rare white Suki, the 1-white-white 2/4 that gives your other creatures +1/+0. And then whenever another creature or ally you control dies, you make a 1/1 ally token, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Suki, courageous, something, something.
Yeah.
So there were two copies of that in the pack.
Wait, how? On Arena?
On Arena, yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. I don't know if I've seen that before.
And then Sokka, Lateral Strategist, which is one Azorius Azorius for a 2/4 uncommon with vigilance, and whenever it and at least one other creature attack, you draw a card.
I would take one of the two rares myself.
You would take one of the two rares? So here was my thought, which is that there's some amount of value in Sokka going in white or blue, right?
It being
flexible. You're also, no matter what you do, putting two people very near to you, to your left, into white.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be hard. Like, the cards are good enough that it's going to be hard to push them off of white, probably.
Yes.
And I think Sokka is pretty close to that Suki in terms of they're both 2/4s. Sokka has vigilance. The other one does not. The other one pumps your team. But I don't know how, like, totally relevant that is. Like, it's good in a certain board state, but Sokka being able to draw you cards is also great. I think I'm more scared as an opponent of a turn three Sokka than I am Suki. But it's close, and I decided ultimately that the flexibility was worth it for me for Sokka, and then looked at the game in hand win rate, and Suki has like a 3% higher game in hand win rate or something. So pretty significantly it's Suki's edge, but I still like my pick, I think. It's close for me.
I feel like it's a little like to the point of like you can't force something to be open, but you also like, what happens if white flows from the right?
Then I still have the option to draft white with Sokka, but I give myself the chance to also just draft blue if blue is flowing and stay out of the white mess, yeah. Which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, well, whatever. Okay, I would have taken the rare.
Yeah, that's why I think it's an interesting on whether or not I leveled myself discussion. Yeah.
Okay, so you got Sokka on your pile.
You got Sokka, and you've passed these two white rares.
No wonder your draft start off lower powered as you just
because I pick worse cards.
Yeah, the power.
There okay, we go. Great. There we go. Got them. So pack one, pick two. You see the following cards as options. There is also not a magic card. I just want to check in with you on pretending Pox Bearers. Not a magic card. Orzhov for a 2/1. There's my classic pause. When this creature dies, create a 1/1 white ally creature token.
Yeah, I don't think this card is good. I think the it's right next to the Battle Fan. So I think I do like Battle Fan more than Pox Bearers.
Okay.
But yeah, don't really like either of them.
And then we quickly go into the uncommons. There's a Heibei, Spirit of Balance, the 2 Orzhov for the 3/3. Whenever it enters or attacks, you can sack a creature or an artifact. If you do, put 2+/+1 counters on it. Whenever it leaves, put its counters on target creature you control. There's a Seismic Sense, the green lesson that tutors equal the number of lands you control for a creature or land. There's Combustion Technique, 1 in red for an instant lesson that deals 2 damage, plus the number of lesson cards in your graveyard target creature. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead.
And Benevolent River Spirit.
Which is not in contention, as we discussed earlier in the episode.
Yeah. I mean, the best card in this pack is far and away Combustion Technique. So I would just take that.
There was a point where I think I would have taken Heibei here, but fours are so replaceable in this format. Unless they're truly excellent.
I agree. I think there was a point, a week ago, I think I would have slammed River Spirit here, and I'm just not in that spot anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so Combustion Technique, moving on to pack one, pick three. Very weak pack here. There's Format All-Star Lost Days, 4 and a blue for an instant lesson. The owner of target creature enchantment puts it into their library. Second from the top or on the bottom, you create a clue token. There's Master P and Dao, 4 and a white for a 4/4 first strike. Whenever it attacks, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You can reveal an ally, equipment, or lesson from among them, put it into your hand, put the rest on the bottom. And then Tiger Seal in the rare slot, single blue for the 3/3 Vigi. Beginning of your upkeep, tap this creature. When you draw your second card each turn, untap this creature. You laugh. I've gotten smacked around by some Tiger Seals before.
How?
In tandem with Otter Penguins. Like, my opponent went Tiger Seal, Otter Penguin, and then, like, cantrip the rest of the game, and it was difficult to not die.
Yeah, when your opponent draws 2 cards a turn, that's pretty good. They're probably going to win.
But Tiger Seal costing 1 is what you want to be doing when you're drawing multiple cards a turn. Tiger Seal's not nothing. It's okay. Much like Tiger Dillo. It's like a once every 50 drafts or something. But it's got legs.
Okay. Well, it doesn't. It has fins. But yes. Okay. I think you should take Lost Days out of this pack. Because it is a lesson to pair with Combustion Technique. And I think is on par with like Master P and Dao in terms of power level. And I think all things equal, having passed the 2 white rares, you probably want to avoid white if you have a close pick.
I don't hate that take. Yeah, you can talk me into Lost Days here. Yeah. I'm in for Lost Days.
Okay.
All right, so we take Lost Days. I did take Master P and Dao for the record, but let's say we took Lost Days.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to pack one, pick 4. You see the following cards as options. There's a Sold Out, 3 and a black for an instant, exile target creature. If it was dealt damage this turn, create a clue token. Talk to me about this card. Where are you at?
It's totally fine. I don't know.
Totally fine.
Yeah. It's good, but it's 4 mana. I don't know. It's not anything incredible.
Yeah. There's It'll Quench You, one and a blue for an instant lesson. Counter target spell unless this controller pays two. Still the bane of my existence in this format.
That card is. It's very good. I liked Samp's take on Rough Drafts this week, that Deadly Precision is better than Sold Out for black decks. The single black bone splinters that you can... So you can either just... You destroy a thing if you sack something, or you can pay four additional mana. I think that is better. Like, I want to jam my black decks with Deadly Precisions more than I want Sold Outs.
I'd buy that too. Yeah. There's Glider Kids, 2 and a white for 2/3 flying when it enters Scry 1. There's Team Avatar in the uncommon slot, 2 and a white enchantment. Whenever creature you control attacks alone, it gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. And it's got the buyout clause of 2 and a white discard, deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control to target creature. And in the rare slot, there's still Boiling Rock Rioter, 2 and a black for 3/3 firebending 1. Tap an untapped ally you control, exile target card from a graveyard. When this creature attacks, you may cast an ally spell from among cards you own exiled with this creature.
This pick is really interesting.
I agree. I really want to dive into this pick. There's a lot of implications here.
It's also really interesting if you had Lost Days instead. But I agree. So the one reason I think it's interesting is while you have not taken a black card, both Boiling Rock Rioter and Sold Out being here, I think, is information.
I agree. I think this pick says black is open.
Black is open. And I think Boiling Rock Rioter is a good card.
I agree that it's a good card. I don't think it is better than Team Avatar. I think Team Avatar is a better Magic card.
I would buy that. And certainly, even if we think there's a slight edge to the Rioter, you having inroads to white already certainly gives a tiebreaker to Team Avatar. If you had taken the Lost Days, I think It'll Quench You is really on the table as another lesson that gets you deeper into blue.
That feels like taking too big of a hit in power level to me. No matter what you've taken. I agree, it's like in consideration, but I don't think it's really in consideration.
That's fair. Yeah, you're right. Ultimately, I think you're right. Man, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, with your...
Let's say we have Lost Days. I do think that's the right pick with the information we had about picking the two Sukis.
If you have Lost Days, I would like to think I would take... I would like to think I would have the presence of mind to clock, hey, I think black is open, and I think Boiling Rock Rioter is a good card, and I would take that here.
That would work out very well for you.
Okay.
In pack 3, there's a lot of good black that flows. And I also clocked this as black is open, but it's very hard to voluntarily get into black when I love Team Avatar, probably more than I should. Like, I'm a big Team Avatar stan.
I think that's fair. I haven't gotten to play with that card that much, but it's been very strong against me.
So it's hard, but there is also like that you passed the white. This is the whole reason you took Sokka, but Sokka's not going to be at its best in blue black. I don't know. I think this is a very close pick. I took Team Avatar, Boiling Rock Rioter. Probably works out better for you. It's interesting on, like, this is about the best worst black rare that you could consider, like, well, it's a signal, but I'm gonna keep
you know
what I mean? Like, it's a very nice, like, if this is the Black Wrath, you snap it up. If this is the, like, the stupid 2/3 flyer that makes clues, you snap it up. Like, this is right at the line of, like, well, I know black's open, but do I want to get into black for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a B or a B plus. It's really good.
So is Team Avatar, though, in a better color, you know, like it's hard. So I took Team Avatar knowing that I probably wasn't going to see much white in pack 2, but it's close.
Mm-hmm.
And then next pick, like, you're kind of married to white after taking Team Avatar. The draft gets less interesting, I think, without going full tilt on it. There's an Azula on the Hunt here, 3 and a black, 4/3. I think if you'd taken the black card, you probably follow that pickup with Azula.
No, I would. You take Messenger Hawk, I think.
Take Messenger Azula. Hawk. I love Azula on the Hunt.
Wait, hold on. I got some. Let's play the tape back of you telling me that the Grixis Azula. You got on tap with it. You got a blah blah blah
Grixis.
The card is miles better than Azula on the Hunt.
but it's miles harder to cast also and has significant deck building implications that Azula on the Hunt does not have.
Messenger Hawk is better than Azula on the Hunt. That I just need, I need that in ink.
In ink?
I need that in ink.
I mean, pack one, pick one. You're never choosing between those two cards.
But if you were, you would take Messenger Hawk.
If you were, you would take Messenger Hawk. I agree.
Okay.
All right, fine. You take Messenger Hawk over Azula on the Hunt. I will like it to be noted that I do like Azula on the Hunt, though.
It's noted.
So ultimately, this draft ends up being interesting because it becomes pretty apparent that I could slash should have gotten into black, but I end up navigating in such a way that I'm deep in white and I'm kind of like hedging between a second color of blue or black or red, I think to my detriment more than to my benefit, but ultimately end up in a red-white deck. I did stay open enough that I was able to pack three, pick one, take a Wartime Protesters, and finally lock in red-white.
Okay. That's nice. And it looks like you've only played one game with this thing so far.
I've only played one and one, yep. It's
been a victory. That's good. Yeah, all right, sweet. I'll be curious to see how this plays out, because I think this deck looks fine to clunky.
This deck's good, but yeah. This deck looks fine, except what bumps it above fine is you have so many ways to mize with Team Avatar. You have Double Disciples Deserters, you have Secret Tunnel. Like, that's what I mean, where I know how I want to draft the format, which is decks that can win, and then when they're close to not winning, can mize. And I really like piloting those kinds of decks and drafting towards them. And I think this deck is very good at doing those things.
Yeah. Sweet. Any parting thoughts on the Avatar week? We've got Worlds next week. Are they drafting this at Worlds? Is that what's happening?
They're drafting this at Worlds. Yeah. Did you not see Simon Nielsen's post of like super ready for my Avatar draft? And it was a screenshot of his single limb ranking on Magic Online and his history, and it was like 01, 01, 01, 11, 01, 01, 11, 11.
Yikes.
He's probably gonna 3-0 the draft, easy peasy.
Ooh, maybe I'll try and get in some single limbs on Magic Online this week before Worlds.
Yeah, I think next week I would like to review the Worlds drafts. I mean, I assume we will, but also like what we would have done at Worlds, just as a way to touch in on the competitive nature of the format. Because I do think I am coming around to the fact that I don't think I would like this format as much without the rares. Because it would just be all Jeskai all the time.
Yeah,
I think the rares give you reasons to do things other than Jeskai. And it also is a very interesting puzzle for, well, you know, at any point, like, this giant comet can come down and mess up whatever's happening in the game.
Well, I'll end by saying, going back to what we said last week, is it also puts tension on the drafting. Like, when you have power, like, do you hold on to it? Do you let it go if you're reading signals, etc.? And it also puts tension on the games. And the best games in this format are the games where the saga comes down and you sit up straight in your chair and you go, I think I can beat this.
Yeah.
And that when that happens, you get a really, really good game of Magic.
But you have to be you have to be at a point where you have like the chutzpah to sit up in your chair. Because there was a point the first week where the saga came down and I instantly conceded. That feels horrible.
Like, I agree.
You got to be in the right mental chi before you can experience that that feeling.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, I think as far as parting thoughts, I think a lot of the stuff we said last week, patience in the draft, dig into the drafts, read the signals, don't play bad cards, dig into the gameplay, make sure you're there. Like, I'm still approaching the format exactly as we outlined last week and having a lot of success with it. And I think my note for myself is that I'm probably still too reluctant to go into black. I think after this week and the discussion on tolls and then just seeing that pack one, pick four, where I could have gone into black there, that I'm in I've found my home and I'm fine doing the same thing over and over and over. Like, blue white's my home. And I really like, that's probably my favorite color pair to begin with. And the fact that it is the best here and there's several flavors of it. Like, I'd be happy drafting blue white the rest of the format or trying to draft blue white the rest of the format. And I probably need to dip my toes into black a little bit.
Yeah. For science.
For science. But you're so good at science for the podcast.
my gems are on the altar, ready to be sacrificed for content.
Listen, my gems were on the altar week one. just starting to claw back to even. I'm close.
Yeah.
All right. And on that note, I think we'll send things off. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. Links to our tier list is up there now. Go see where Otter Penguin and Forecasting Fortune Teller stack up. But we've also got links to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch stream, our Patreon page, all of our content on lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.